Hello, I'm Courtney Vian, a senior editor with the Journal of Accountancy, and this is the Journal of Accountancy podcast. Today we'll be speaking with Pam Vaccaro, the CEO of Designs on Time. Pam is a speaker, trainer, and author based in St. Louis, and she specializes in time management. She's been speaking about time management for 27 years, and you can find her work at www.designsontime.com. She'll be talking to us today about ways CPAs can achieve greater happiness and work-life balance. We'll speak with Pam in a moment, but first, please listen to this message from our sponsor.
Did you know 75% of people now prefer to pay by credit or debit? With CPA Charge, you can let your clients pay their bill online and you'll get the reporting details you need for easy reconciliation. AICPA members can sign up at cpacharge.com/podcast and get your program fee waived for 6 months.
Hello, Pam.
Good morning.
It's nice to have you here.
Thanks, Courtney. It's nice to be with you.
So, Pam, you say you dislike the term work-life balance. Why so?
That's a good question. First of all, let me give you a little background about the term itself. Actually, there was a similar term even as far back as the 1800s, where once the Industrial Revolution began, they started to refer to work-pleasure balance. And that stayed in vogue until 1979, when the UK started talking about work-life balance. And then we followed up in the United States in about 1986. Work-life balance terminology started to appear in journals, especially industry journals. And there's really no mystery around that when you think about that time. We were just starting to step into the waters of what we now know as a full-blown digital age, where it's very hard to separate our life of any kind because of the availability of continuous access to us via technology. Since the beginning, it's irritated me, and I didn't know why at first, but when you just look at the wording, work and life, you've immediately separated the two in almost an antagonistic assumption. And then the word balance also implies that there can be some kind of equal status. So I move away from that and take a look at different terminology around work-life balance. And so that brings me to this new look at it, which is, what if we just talked about what does a good life look like for an individual? Paula Caproni, I believe she's still at the University of Michigan, asked that question. And in my work, I'll ask people, what does a good life look like to you? What's a satisfying life? And it seems that there's an instant view of what's the perfect day, or what's the talk about when you're having the time of your life. And many people will say, well, work's not in it. But when you talk about work as play, they're quick to say, of course we enjoy work. Of course it's part of our life. So we also can make reference to the assumption that we should all be passionate about our work. And that, too, is an unrealistic expectation. Not everybody does, but what are the things in their lives they do feel passionate about and are able to bring them in? So my difficulty is making an antagonistic set of words. That's very difficult for people to achieve.
So you prefer to talk about what a good life looks like.
I think that's an easier way to go.
Yeah.
And I think people enjoy talking about, well, what does a good life look like?
One thing you often hear from CPAs during busy season is that they don't have a lot of time to spend with their friends and families.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a way to make that time with their friends and families more meaningful, even if they can't have the large blocks of time that they might be used to?
You know, that's where we kind of talk again about snippets of time. A phone call that's very meaningful, very focused, can keep that connection, even though it's not spending a half a day. But saying to the person, this, as you know, is a limited time for me, but thinking about you, making those connections with people can be a good way to go during that three and a half months. And it reduces their stress so that, you know, that they're not thinking about all the things they're not doing at that time. They're actually doing something. That's where a snippet of time, by the way, is a 7 or 8 minute period during the day that many of us will say, well, there's not enough time to start something or not enough time to finish something. But a, you know, a focused person or an intentional person can use that small piece of time to make those connections that are satisfying and are part of the good life.
What are some ways CPAs can enjoy their work more at times when it's stressful?
So one of the ways that I encourage people to enhance their good life is to buy into what we could call the law of diminishing returns. And that's where the more I work at something, the less return I get, because there is a point at which too much of a focus on something or too much focus on a work project will begin to have diminishing returns. And so I encourage people to bring back recess, to have recess. And when you think about recess when we were kids, that was a very, very enjoyable time. It was a time to interact. It was a time to relax. It was a time to expel some energy. It was a time to give the teachers a break. So bringing back recess is a way to enhance the joy at work. See, the brain research, and there's been a lot done since the term work-life balance started in 1986. Brain research shows that our brain really, really wants novelty. It wants to be refreshed. And one of the ways to enhance enjoyment of the work we do is to be refreshed. And the there are a lot of different calculations about that. Tony Boatman, who does a lot on productivity, says work 52 minutes off 17. Maybe that's not the magic number. I always found that 75 minutes of work and maybe 12 minutes of doing something different with your brain is very helpful. This actually is one of the key points that I'll be making here about recess, and it's really doable. You can walk around the building. You can do something that you think is novel. That's the novelty, by the way, that brain's propensity for novelty is also why people procrastinate. It's not, I always say procrastinators are not non-doers. They're just doers of sometimes the ineffective. But in this case, breaking your work is actually productive in the end. So, but the brain needs to switch gears totally for a few minutes, and it comes back. You come back quite refreshed from that. And, you know, another thing about that, too, is interacting with people at work. Asking questions of, you know, what do you like to do for fun? Not always about work. And that enhances some of the enjoyment of the workplace during this, especially during the stressful time. And some of this can be used all the time, obviously.
So if you're a manager or a boss during this busy season, what are some things you could do to make work easier on your employees?
Oh, you asked the magic question. One of the things that in my trainings that I feel strongly about is the importance of leadership and creating a culture, not only a productivity and focus. And John Van Heusen is the CEO of Ace Hardware. And in an interview, I really loved what he said. He said, you can go to our hardware store and you will see a difference between our hardware store and the larger the hardware stores that we know are the big box stores, as they're sometimes called. And he says, quote, we strive to make it easier on the brains of our customers. And I love that, because if you think about when you go into a smaller hardware store. They're usually easier to navigate. And he says, we want people to be able to find things and it be easier on the brain. And I thought about that. And I think that's one of the things managers can do, especially at the beginning of the busy season in January, to sit down with individuals or their team, if they have one, and just ask this question. It's going to get tough at times. We know what we need to do. That's not going to change. But how can we make it easier on each other's brains? And that might look like, instead of interrupting, if you want to use that word, every time there's a question, perhaps batching those questions to a later time when you can ask all at once, rather than interrupting the person's focus, as we'll talk about here somewhere. And I think if you are a manager, you want to monitor, is the person taking a break? Are they really doing what we just said earlier about relaxing a bit, changing your focus, doing something that helps reduce the amount of stress? And I think a good manager also is very clear with directions, and so that the person doesn't have to work that hard at understanding directions, whether it's verbal or an email. So I think there's a lot a manager can do in this situation.
Thank you. So, Pam, you've talked a bit about focus, and you've described a phenomenon called focus deficit disorder. Now, can you tell us a little bit about that?
I'd be glad to. I spoke about time management for years, and certainly that was around and for a long time, and still is. But in the early 2000s, I started to hear people say, hey, Pam, it feels like I have ADD. But then they would giggle right afterwards. And I thought, people who have ADD really don't find this particularly a laughing matter. In fact, the National Association of Professional Organizers at that time, or really earlier, had a subset in their organization for people who had ADD. And that was a special skill, to work with people who have ADD and trying to organize. And I thought, that's not what they're talking about. There must be something else. And so I thought, I wonder if it's about their focus. And so I came up with a term called focus deficit disorder, the inability to focus for any length of time before something or someone will request a break in your attention or your focus. And that includes self-inflicted breaks that occur frequently during the day if we watch ourselves and how we behave around our work. So before I said take breaks, that's deliberate, that's intentional, that has a purpose for relaxing your brain. These are the kinds of things that come up where I know I need to focus on something, but I change my focus and I look at something else. That's a self-inflicted change in attention or focus. So therefore, the term FDD, when I asked people about it, whether I was in the United States or even if I was in the Middle East, there was this head nodding going on. It's like, yes, that makes sense. And the reason I think it made sense is I think people have a sense they have more control over their focus than they do over a time which has remained 24 hours a day. And really, there's not a lot we can do about it. Well, can do, we can control our focus. And one of the things we also know about brains from brain research is our brain can really only focus on one thing at a time. Good example of that, you try to watch television and there's a crawl or at the bottom words, and you try to listen to the person. You really can't do both at the same time. You can switch back and forth, which we call attention, sometimes multitasking. But your brain can only focus on one thing at a time. And when you think about the importance of the work of a CPA, focus is extremely important. One error can be disastrous for the work that they do. And so focus becomes extremely important as an activity that we do around our work. And what I like about it is that people do have more of a sense of being empowered in their work.
So what are some signs that you might have a problem with focus?
One of the signs is happens when at the end of the day, you hear yourself say, I was so busy all day, but I didn't get a thing done. And, you know, most people go, you know, I've heard myself say that. And that usually means that I've had so many distractions during the day. My focus was broken so many times. I have a feeling nothing got accomplished. So that's one sign of FDD or focus deficit disorder. Another sign is related to that. You did a lot, but it might not have been your highest priorities. And similar to that, so there's kind of that empty calorie feeling like I did a lot, but I didn't feel that it had an impact. And for so long, the to-do list has been the benchmark for did I get things done? Did I cross things off? Some people, when they do something that wasn't on their list, they put it on their list so they can cross it off. There's that desire to, you know, get things done that way. That isn't always the best benchmark anymore, because if you step back and you might not be giving yourself credit for doing the most important thing at the time. And if you end your day going, if I hadn't done that, how do I, what would have been the consequences? That might be a better indicator that you actually got some things done. So there, what I call the tyranny of the to-do list. I'm all for to-do lists, but they can no longer be our scorecard or our report card at the end of the day. So when I've talked about this all over the in parts of the world, folks will go, you know, that's true. I don't give myself enough credit for what I'm doing now. And they see that so many things come their way that were unplanned, that are important, and accomplishing them is in fact the very thing they should have been doing, whether it was on their list or not.
So what are some things that CPAs could do to improve their focus?
One of the things is to recognize some things that come from the old time management world. And this is not my research, this is the research of people who actually study how our brain works. And they have an equation called 1 = 4.5. It's been around for a while. Translated, that means 1 unit of focused time equals 4.5 units if you break your focus. So you have a CPA working on a particular task. 1 unit of time equals, let's say, a minute. That will be 1 minute of productivity. Let's say a colleague walks by and simply says, you know, hey, Sam, how was your weekend? Brief interaction. Sam says, hey, it was good. When Sam goes back to the task, his brain cannot go right back to where it was. And we all know this almost intuitively or instinctively. It doesn't go right back. So what Sam has to do is go to rewind or try to remember exactly where he was in this particular point of the project. Some of it might get lost in the interruption, and Sam goes on from there. The brain scientists say that now will take 4.5 minutes of your time to do the very same thing that would have taken a minute. So what does that say for us? It says that if you want to prevent focus deficit disorder, one, you control your own, that was we used to call interruptions, our breaks of your attention, or you work with someone and you're aware as a group that you're not going to do that so often. That's where we go back to, you know, during the months, especially January to April, that we're very much aware with each other of not asking for that extra 4.5 minutes. You know, it can wait fine. This is not encouraging a cold work culture. It's just encouraging a more aware culture of how we interrupt each other or how we ask for each other's 4.5 units of time. So that's why I encourage batching, as I mentioned, waiting an interaction with someone, but batching my request rather than asking for that person's attention every time something comes in into my mind. And while we're at it, I think avoiding multitasking is one of the worst things we ever told people to do during the time management early years. Multitasking is not productive. We can multitask on some things, but the question will always be, what could possibly happen here that would break productivity? Look at the day and ask yourself this question: when am I physically and mentally at my best? And choosing that particular time of day to guard and to use for your higher priority. It's called knowing your chronobiological pattern. Chronobiology was introduced in the 1930s, and it simply says there are two times a day when your mental and physical, your physical and then your mental acuity are at their highest. And my prescription there is use that time for your highest priorities. Some of us are morning people, some aren't. And again, if you, Courtney, are a morning person, you're a CPA trying to get your maximum amount of work done, then one of the things that I want to do is make sure that I respect your work time, your best time of day. I think that's an easy one. The other end of the spectrum is if it's not your highest energy time, try doing your lower priority tasks during that time.
Earlier, you talked about self-inflicted breaks, how people interrupt their own focus. Can you talk a bit about ways to improve your own focus?
One of the great temptations for breaking your focus, your self-inflicted FDD, is checking emails frequently, having alerts on your emails. Emails have now replaced meetings, surprisingly, or maybe not surprisingly, as the number one loss of productivity in the workplace. At least it was in 2017. Used to be meetings were the greatest loss of productivity because they weren't focused. They weren't really focused in such a way that people felt something was getting done. I think that's improving.
So a lot of CPAs receive emails from work outside their working hours from coworkers and maybe even from clients these days. What do you recommend that CPAs do about this?
You know, that's a hard question. First of all, I've worked with companies where it was the expectation, the rule of thumb that you answer emails during personal time. It is happening, and we all know once you start answering them, there's the expectation that you will always answer them. So my suggestion here is, first of all, decide how you want to do that. And if you need to set boundaries around that, why are you doing that? What's the reason you're doing that? So let's say you say, I don't think I want to, but I've chosen not to, but what can I do? And here are a couple suggestions. One, everybody wants to know what I call the what and when rule. What are you going to do for me and when? And my experience has said that if I get an email during my personal time, which is nowhere near the number that a CPA is getting, especially at this time, I can give a very short answer. John, I will have that answer to you by 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. That does two things. One, it says to John, I know what you are asking for here, the what, and I will have it at this time, which is the when. Most reasonable people will be satisfied with that. You've told them what and when. What else that does for you is it gives you that control to be setting your priorities, not just being similar to a pinball machine where you're bouncing all over in your personal time. So the what and when rule is very successful, I think, in those cases. Again, the telling the person, almost to the minute when you'll have it. And sometimes I say, tell them you'll have it by 8:12 tomorrow morning. And that breaks their assumption about the even numbers and says, wow, okay, I'll look for that at 8:12 tomorrow. The other is to have very clear emails, very short emails, emails with bullet points that are easy to read. That adage about how can I make it easier on the brain of the person. So any email I choose to respond to is going to be very, very, very short and clear. Here's another one that I think engenders trust is giving updates. So before I leave the office, if I'm a CPA, I might update so-and-so and so-and-so that I'm on it, we're still working on it, just where are we with everything? And my experience has shown that people relax around that when they know something is actually going on. They relax, it's getting done. So this is not saying you never answer emails, but now you have controlled them and set up boundaries around the emails. So I think it's pretty much of a win-win, but I also am really strongly underlining that it's kept at a minimum on personal time. And that's really a personal thing. There's no hard, fast rule. People have to decide what style they're comfortable with when they work, especially during those 3 months. And we do know, I mean, we want our CPAs, we don't necessarily want to be perfectionists because that's what I call gift wrapping the garbage, but we do want them to do excellent work. And so, you know, they're going to have to find that sweet spot of how to get the job done well and also to protect their own leisure time.
I love that phrase, gift wrapping the garbage. Can we go back to that?
Sure.
Yeah. So CPAs do have a tendency to be perfectionists. I think it just comes with the job. How can they know when they are going over the line? They want to produce excellent, accurate work, obviously, but they might tend to take that too far.
Right, and there's a tipping point for perfectionists. And again, one of their strong suits is the excellent work, which who doesn't want that with any job? But this particular one right now, we're all aware we want our CPAs to do excellent work. Here's one of the things that I've seen work over the years with perfectionists, and I've worked with them individually and certainly in we look at personality style in companies, is what I call the trusted friend technique, where it's a short list of people perfectionists trust to evaluate what they do. And so if I work with, you, Courtney, and I'm a perfectionist, one of the things I'll say, okay, I think I'm at the tipping point. Could you look at this for 10 minutes and tell me, should I just sign off now? And if they trust that person, if the perfectionist trusts this person, they're likely to let go of the reins and say, okay, that's a tough one. It's like jumping into the abyss sometimes. But having that affirmation, it could be their manager is the one they want to say, could you just look at this and is enough enough here?
Again, that was Pam Vaccaro of Designs on Time. That's www.designsontime.com. This has been the Journal of Accountancy podcast. Thank you for listening.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein. and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.